The Duxbury Chronicles, Part 1. The Detective and the Hangman. Plymouth County, Massachusetts, December 21st, 2015, 11:21 p.m. 5 miles outside Duxbury. Detective Jonathan McCarthy stood in the ankle-deep snow, blowing hot air into his cupped hands while examining the scene. There really wasn't much to see. Just a guy hanging from a tree. A guy hanging from a tree in a dark, snowy forest, that is. It really just looked like some redneck had decided his life wasn't quite panning out and hung himself in the woods, but Sheriff Dan George had called the detective anyway. As a general rule of thumb, Dan and Jonathan didn't like each other. Jonathan being a 10-year veteran in the force in L.A. and the sheriff being a 50-something backwoods redneck. The two were natural opposites. Still, Jonathan knew that the fat man hadn't called him out of bed at this hour out of spite. Not this time, anyway. Even over his cell phone, Jonathan could tell that Dan was spooked. Now that he was on the scene, he guessed it was because of the plastic bag over the dead guy's head. To be honest, it looked spooky as shit, but Jonathan had seen far worse back in Los Angeles. They hadn't been able to identify the Vic on account of the bag. His face was completely hidden by the thick plastic. Now they were waiting for forensics to finish up before they cut the guy down and figured out who it was that decided to off themselves that day. And the wind picked up suddenly, blowing through the trees and causing a chorus of creaks and groans from tree limbs. Jonathan cursed and shoved his hands into the pockets of his trench coat, giving up on the idea of warming them with his breath. The camera flashed as Billy Thornton, one of the two forensic guys, took another photo. The scene was briefly illuminated by the brilliant blue of the camera, and Jonathan thought he caught sight of something he hadn't seen before on the dead man. He moved to the right, trudging through the snow in a wide circle around the hanging man, his breath coming out in big white puffs. It couldn't be more than 20 fucking degrees out there. "He's got a bag over his head, Johnny," Jonathan remembered the sheriff saying in a shaky voice over the phone. He could practically hear the man's double chins quivering out in the snowy darkness. As soon as Jonathan had laid his eyes on the body, his first thought was that the bastard wanted to be thorough. If the news for some reason hadn't been enough, the plastic bag surely would have finished the job. Jonathan continued to trudge around the right of the corpse, giving the body a wide berth as he circled through the snow, still looking for whatever it was that had caught his eye during the flash of the forensic guy's camera. He was a big guy, whoever the hangman was. He wore a black and red plaid jacket, Bob Villa style, and a pair of rough-cut blue jeans. The boots that covered his dead toes and swayed in the bitter wind were a brand called Bear Claw. Jonathan had never heard of it. "Hell of a way you go," Mike Lowry, the other forensics guy, said through a mouthful of chewing tobacco. "What do you think of it, Mike?" Bill asked, as his camera flashed a few more times. "I don't know. Maybe Darby Gents?" "Darby? It's a goddamn shame." Jonathan half listened to the 2 men as he continued to circle around the body. Duxbury was a small town. Everybody knew everybody. Darby Gents was the football coach for the local high school, and by virtue of local grapevine, Jonathan knew that Darby's wife had left him a few weeks ago. Still, he wasn't sure if that's who was hanging in front of him. There was something unfamiliar about the body. Jonathan had come to know virtually everyone since he'd moved to Duxbury 2.5 years ago, and the detective in him was saying that this wasn't anyone he'd ever seen. Thunder suddenly boomed in the distance, halting his movement and drawing the detective's attention from the hanging corpse to the dark, overcast sky above. The moon was full but hidden, illuminating the clouds above in a pale ghostly light. The forest itself was well lit for such a late hour. It had snowed 3 inches the previous night, and now the woods were lit up in that magical pinkish-purplish glow that only a freshly fallen blanket of snow can create. "Sounds like a storm's a-comin'," Deputy Jimmy McDuff said to no one in particular. Was all Jonathan offered in reply. The detective turned his attention from the sky back to the dead man. The guy had to be at least 50 pounds overweight. His jacket and undershirt were pulled up as a result of the noose and the corpse's weight. His belly sagged out over his pants. Yeah, he'd been a big dude, but who was he? Without taking his eyes off the corpse, he reached into the breast pocket of his jacket and pulled out a Marlboro light. He tried to be slick and light the smoke without looking away from the dead guy, but the wind forced him to look down and light the cigarette like a normal person. "You guys think we can wrap it up soon? There's a storm coming," Sheriff George said from the shadows. Jonathan turned to gaze at the 6-foot burly fat man standing against the trunk of a tree. His normally imposing figure looked strangely small as he stood there. The sheriff had his arms crossed over himself, but Jonathan could tell it wasn't for warmth. "What the hell's wrong with him?" he wondered. Jonathan didn't like the man, but he knew he was no coward, certainly not afraid of the woods at night. Sheriff George was born and bred a country boy, and yet here he stood hugging himself in his big trench coat, his eyes nervously darting around the surrounding forest. All told, there were 6 of them out in the woods. The 2 forensic guys, Bill Jenkins and Mike Lowry, the sheriff and himself, Deputy Jim McDuff, and the local reporter, General Butchins. 6 grown adults, and the sheriff was shaking like a leaf. "What the fuck?" was all he could think to say to himself. "Sheriff, would you care to make a statement?" he heard the reporter ask. She was quite the looker. Jonathan supposed that's how she got the job, and it had to be, because the chick was definitely no rocket scientist. "A statement?" Sheriff George asked condescendingly. "Why, yes, Miss Butchins, I surely would. Here it goes. It's cold as the ice Dante found Lucifer in. There's a blizzard the size of Texas coming this way, and we should really think about getting the hell out of here. How's that for a statement, Miss Butchins?" Janelle gave him a in response. Jimmy McDuff gave a somewhat stifled chuckle. Bill Jenkins and Mike Lowry continued on with their tasks, chatting away about who they thought the dead guy was. They were either oblivious or didn't care about the sheriff's obvious discomfort with the situation at hand. "What the hell's he so nervous about?" Jonathan asked himself again. Finally, he decided he had enough. He felt bad calling the sheriff out on being scared, but the detective in him wanted to know what his problem was, so he momentarily turned his attention from the hanging man and started to walk over to Sheriff George. That's when there came a sudden sound that he couldn't quite place. It was a sort of quick swooshing noise that came from behind him, followed by the cracking of several branches and then frightened cries of his companions. There was a "Holy Christ!" that came from the sheriff. A "Jesus!" that came from the deputy Jimmy, and a sort of high-pitched, Muppet-sounding meep that came from Janelle. Jonathan whirled back around in the direction of the corpse. For a second, the detective did not understand what he was seeing. The hanging man was nowhere to be seen, and neither was Mike Lowry. Bill Jenkins was on his ass, frantically scooting backward through the snow, his mouth agape and his eyes on the dark canopy above. "What the fuck?" was all Jonathan could think to say. "He's not dead," Bill suddenly shrieked as his frantic ass scooting took him past where Jonathan was standing. "Jesus, he's not dead." "What the fuck?" Jonathan asked again, feeling suddenly very much like how Sheriff George looked. He reached for his pistol. "Did you see that?" Sheriff George cried. "Holy Christ, did you see that?" "Where's the body?" Jonathan asked. "It took him," Bill was shrieking. The man used his ass to carve a pass through the snow all the way back to the sheriff. "Oh, God, Mike!" At this point, Jonathan was feeling very out of the loop. "Could someone please tell me what the fuck?" The loud snapping of branches above his head made his words catch in his throat. Instinctively, Jonathan dove out of the way, blindly rolling through the snow. A split second later, there came a heavy thump from the direction he dove from. Janelle and the sheriff shrieked, and Deputy Jimmy shouted, "Freeze!" Jonathan Combat rolled and came up on one knee with his gun pointed at the ready, a maneuver that had saved his life more than once. But then his eyes settled on the sudden source of all the commotion, and his mind missed a step. For what he beheld made no sense. The dead man was back. He was still hanging from a noose, except this time the noose wasn't wrapped around the original tree branch. It was just stretching up and up into the dark canopy above. The man was hanging over where Jonathan had been standing seconds ago. The man's arms were outstretched and his head tilted upward in a position Jonathan found reminiscent of Christ on the cross. Holy shit, he's not dead, Jonathan's mind screamed. He aimed his weapon at the hanging man. Freeze, he shouted, repeating Deputy Jimmy's words. Get on the ground. His words faltered as the noose around the man's neck suddenly yanked him upward, neck bones and vertebrae cracking sickeningly. As the man rocketed up in a blur, disappearing into the darkness above. Well, that's certainly not something you see every day, Jonathan thought to himself as he stared up into the dark canopy. Detective, we gotta get out of here, Sheriff's voice cut through his thoughts. What? He asked dumbfounded and turned to face the big man. Sheriff George wasn't waiting for a reply. He and Chanel were already hightailing it out of there. Deputy Jimmy, for his part, had stood his ground. Bill Jenkins was nowhere to be seen. Are you fucking kidding me right now? He asked the rapidly fading figure of Sheriff George. A perp just took one of your men, Sheriff, and you're running away? That ain't no perp, Detective. Sheriff George shouted back over his shoulder, and he disappeared into the darkness. I think Sheriff might be right, Johnny, Deputy Jimmy said to Jonathan's right, keeping his gun trained on the darkness overhead. I think we need to call for backup. That does sound reasonable, Deputy. Jonathan agreed, straining his eyes to catch any sign of the hangman. But there's nothing up there. It was all just shadows and leafless branches against a dark gray sky. Then there came another loud snapping of branches, this time from the direction the sheriff and Chanel had run. A scream erupted from Janelle's lips, followed by the deafening crack of gunfire. Both Jonathan and Deputy Jimmy took off in the direction of the sounds. There were 6 shots in total. Jonathan could tell that the sheriff was firing old Betsy, his treasured Smith & Wesson 500. A ridiculously huge pistol fired 44 Magnum rounds, pretty light on the ammo side, but a round fired from that weapon could blow the trunk off a small tree in half. Jonathan heard that unmistakable sound of an empty chamber clicking, followed by a loud jumble of curse words from the sheriff. Then came another cacophony of snapping branches and a scream from Janelle. Both Jonathan and Jimmy rounded the large trunk of an ancient oak and almost ran straight into the sheriff and Janelle. Janelle screamed, and the sheriff swung wildly with the butt of his pistol. Jimmy dodged just one time, narrowly avoiding what Jonathan was sure to have been a concussion. Jesus, Sheriff, it's just me. Jimmy? Mother Mary, you're lucky I didn't knock your block off. Sheriff, Jonathan gasped as he struggled to catch his breath. We need to stick together. Then move your ass, Detective, George snapped. For Christ's sake, I'm 30 years your senior and twice your weight. You kidding me? Jonathan snapped back. You took off while your deputy and I stood ground. I don't know what's going on, but someone just assaulted an officer of the law, and you're the goddamn sheriff. Sheriff George flinched from Jonathan's words as if he'd been struck. I just saw what happened, he said in a quiet growl. A dead man hanging from a noose just grabbed one of my men and went rocketing up into the trees with him. He wasn't dead, Jonathan said matter-of-factly. He couldn't have been. The sheriff suddenly laughed. He wasn't dead? Well, he sure as shit should have been after I hit him with 4 of my 6 shots from old Betsy, because that fucker dropped right down beside me and little Miss Janelle here, and I can tell I just pegged that fucker at least 4 times at near point-blank range. Any normal person would have the courtesy to keel over and die, but that son of a bitch, he just went right back up into the trees. As if on cue, there came the sound of tree branches bending and breaking from the canopy above. The 3 men simultaneously snapped their weapons up toward the darkness. The sheriff realized he hadn't reloaded his weapon and cursed, quickly bending down to the task. Jonathan thought he saw a dark man-sized shape swoop by overhead through the shadows, but then it was gone. Johnny here don't believe me, Sheriff George sneers. Tell him, Miss Reporter. Tell him what you just saw. It's true, Janelle said in a shaky voice as she stared at the dark canopy. The man just came falling out of the trees right beside us, and the sheriff shot him. I think he might have even... She struggled not to vomit as she said it. I think he might have even shot one of his arms off, and he just went flying right back up into the trees. Jonathan glanced away from the canopy and scanned the ground around them. It was too dark to be sure, but there were black puddles all over the ground that he guessed were blood. There was no sign of a disembodied appendage, though. So, where's the arm now?
Oh, for God's sake, how should I know? He took it with him, Sheriff shouted.
Look, you ain't from around here, Johnny, George said as he slammed a .45 caliber round into the last open chamber of his gun and then snapped it back into place. But there's some strange things that happen sometimes in Duxbury that city folk just don't understand.
It's true what the sheriff says, Johnny, Jimmy said in little more than a whisper. My granddaddy used to tell me stories about this part of the land.
He used to tell you how bad the land was out here, didn't he? Sheriff George asked.
Yeah,
Jimmy nodded as his gun played across the darkness above.
Told me these woods got something in them. Something that lives beneath the ground. I never believed him, of course, but I never really came out here either.
Not many people do, Sheriff George said, his voice taking on the same whisper-like quality as his deputy. Now, Detective, I know that you're a practical man, and I begrudgingly respect you for it, but there's what appears to be a dead man hanging from a noose who's flying through the trees. There came a sudden peal of thunder, and everyone tensed up for a moment. Jonathan noticed for the first time that Janelle had a can of mace in her hand. He almost laughed, despite himself. The guy was wearing a bag over his head. What was mace going to do?
So what do you suggest, Sheriff? Jonathan asked finally.
I suggest we go back to town, get back up, come back with an armed posse and clean house.
Tonight? Not tomorrow? We come back tonight and find Mike.
Of course. I ain't leaving him out here, Sheriff spat. Now come on. It's more than a half-hour drive back to town. The storm will be on us before we get back anyway, so I suggest we get a move on.
The storm was getting closer, that was a fact. The wind was picking up, and big fluffy flakes were already beginning to fall through the air. Jonathan pondered their options for a moment. Finally, he spoke.
Fuck that. Go back to the SUV, radio for backup. Then go get your posse. I'll stay here.
What? Sheriff George asked, incredulous. You're right, Sheriff. I'm not from around here. And because I'm not from around here, I'm not buying into your superstitious bullsh... Jonathan's words were abruptly cut off as a large figure of the hangman suddenly dropped from above and landed on the sheriff with bone-crushing weight. There came a sudden explosion of snow as both figures collided with the ground. Jonathan instinctively raised his hands to protect his face and took a few faltering steps backwards. Jimmy shouted out in surprise and Janelle screamed. Jonathan heard the snapping of several bones along with a sort of guttural gargling from the sheriff. But by the time the detective lowered his hands, the sheriff's broken body was wrapped in the hangman's embrace and rocketing upward toward the canopy above. Jonathan got a better look at the hangman as he rose up into the trees. The man had three large holes in his chest from where the sheriff had shot him, and his right arm, though still attached, looked like he could fall off at any second. Never mind the fact that the arm was bearing the weight of a man who had to be at least 250 pounds. Jonathan took aim with his weapon but did not fire for fear of hitting the sheriff. In another instant, both fat men had disappeared entirely into the trees above. That's when Jonathan noticed the coughing and gagging sounds coming from behind him. He whirled around. Jimmy was on his knees, gagging and shoveling snow into his face like a madman. Janelle was standing over him, just patting him on the back and saying, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry," over and over again in a shaky voice. What the fuck? Jonathan asked for the umpteenth time this evening. Janelle looked up from Jimmy's gagging form.
I'm sorry, she squeaked. I maced him by accident.
The would-be reporter was almost crying.
Jesus.
And for a second there, he'd been considering giving the chick his spare sidearm. Jonathan quickly sprang into action, running over to Jimmy and helping the man to his feet.
All right, buddy. We're going to take the sheriff's advice and get the hell out of here.
Jimmy sputtered in reply. Janelle, you stay close. We move quickly and quietly. We're only about a half mile from where we parked. Janelle sobbed and nodded.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to spray him.
I know, Jonathan said with as much sympathy as he could muster. It's okay, Mrs. Butchins. Let's just get out of here.
Okay.
Janelle's crying quieted somewhat. And with that, the trio started moving. It wasn't easy. The ground was uneven and the snow was deep in some places. And snow was starting to fall more heavily as they moved through the forest. The wind began to pick up, blowing through the dark trees in gusts that kicked clouds of the winter elements up into the air around them. Jimmy moved well for a man who could barely see, recovering quickly each time he stumbled, and with every moment that went by, his vision cleared up more.
Can't believe she fucking maced me, Jimmy said under his breath.
Jonathan smiled despite himself. He could believe it. Jonathan was of the opinion that in this day and age, the only thing reporters and journalists were good for were spreading lies and rumors. Most, he thought, simply worked for the military propaganda machine.
Almost there,
Jonathan said as they neared the end of the forest. Then came a sudden horrified shriek out from somewhere in the darkness behind them. That's when it occurred to Jonathan that he hadn't seen Bill Jenkins since he'd gone scooting past him on his ass more than 10 minutes ago. The shriek lent strength to their legs, and the trio picked up pace. In another moment, they were out of the woods and crossing the field they'd parked the police SUV in. Thunder boomed overhead, and the wind howled. There was no doubt now that the storm was upon them. By the time they'd all gotten situated in the vehicle, Jimmy's eyesight had recovered significantly. He snatched the radio receiver.
Deputy Jimmy McBoff, we're out here on the Northwest Woods. We have officers down, requesting immediate backup.
The only answer they got was static. Jimmy repeated the message. More static. Jonathan turned the key and the engine of the SUV roared into life. The headlights illuminated the field and the edge of the forest. Jonathan strained his eyes for a moment. If something was out there watching them, the falling snow was keeping them well hidden.
Goddamn storm must be messing with the radio.
Jonathan nodded as he threw the SUV in reverse.
Like a badly written horror story, he said.
Then he punched it, and the vehicle took off in the direction of town. The three sat in tense silence for a moment as they flew down the bumpy dirt road. Jonathan kept his eyes focused on the land in front of the bright headlights, not wanting to think what may be stalking them from the darkness of the trees that zipped by both sides. The snow was falling even more heavily now, coming down in sheets so thick that using the brights would be suicide, so Jonathan kept the low beams on as they rolled down the dark road that looked more like a tunnel than a street. Finally, after what seemed like an eternity, they crested a hill and the lights of Duxbury came into view in the valley 2 miles below. They reached the end of the dirt road, and Jonathan took a hard left onto Apple Tree Lane. The tires would have squealed loudly had there not been 4 inches of compact snow between them and the pavement. As it was, the SUV swerved and careened dangerously to the right, but then the vehicle regained its traction and straightened out. A few seconds later, they were shooting down the road. There was roughly 2.5 miles of rural darkness between them and the edge of town. Jonathan decided to slow it down to about 45.
What the hell just happened back there?
Janelle asked in a shaky voice.
You tell me, Jonathan said. You know a hell of a lot more about the lore of this county than I do.
And that sure as shit looked like something straight out of an old horror story.
Jesus. My granddaddy wasn't kidding about Kenny's Road.
Deputy Jimmy said in an exasperated voice.
Kenny's what?
Jonathan asked.
My uncle used to tell me about the old road that ran through these woods somewhere out there. Said it was there before the colonists arrived, and that no one had any clue who made it. He said the first settlers of Duxbury were warned by the local tribes that the place was just bad.
The SUV went over a bump in the road, and Jonathan had to swerve slightly to keep control.
You know, now that I think about it, there was a story about a man being hung on Ken's Road, Chanel chimed in. Supposedly a gallows was built there a long time ago, but only one execution was ever performed before the place was abandoned.
So, you're saying there's an ancient, haunted road somewhere out there? The detective asked, his voice a mixture of incredulity and apprehension.
That's how my granddaddy told it, said the deputy.
Jonathan shook his head. He couldn't believe he was having this conversation. This was ridiculous. This was fucking ridiculous.
Why on earth had he moved out to the country?
Jimmy, he began, trying to sound like a logical detective once again. I don't mean to be disrespectful toward your grandfather, but doesn't that sound a little... His words were cut short as something heavy landed on the roof. There was a heavy thump, and the frame of the SUV shook violently. The roof buckled and caved in as if a boulder had been dropped on top of it. The SUV swerved to the left and then to the right. Chanel screamed.
Shit! Shit!
Jonathan cursed as he fought to regain control of the SUV. He glanced in his side view mirror just in time to see a bloody hand wrap around it. The mirror was violently yanked upward, and both hand and the mirror vanished. After a few tense seconds of swerving left and right, Jonathan managed to gain control of the vehicle. The SUV straightened, and Jonathan accelerated as fast as he dared. Jimmy was already in the back, struggling to unhook the 12-gauge shotgun from its mount as the car jarred around. Before Jonathan could say anything else, his eyes were drawn to a dark shape falling through the sky just in front of him. The hangman landed on the hood of the SUV, and the hood violently buckled inward. The SUV careened dangerously once again. The hangman reached up and grabbed both windshield wipers, then the noose pulled tight, and the man rocketed back upward, ripping off the wipers, taking them with him on his rapid ascent into the overcast sky. Jonathan simultaneously fought to keep the SUV on the road while continuing to watch in disbelief as the man disappeared into the swirling snow above their heads, looking like some sort of twisted marionette making a rapid exit from the stage. The last thing he saw of the man was his Bear Claw brand boots being swallowed up by the gray clouds.
You gotta be fucking kidding me,
he said to no one in particular. Chanel screamed again as if that was going to help anything.
Only she put the mace back in her purse, the detective thought to himself.
The hood of the SUV looked like shit. He couldn't tell if there was smoke rising out of it or if it was just swirling snow. He supposed that if the engine had been damaged, they'd known either way soon enough. Jonathan heard the distinct ka-chack of a round being loaded into the 12-gauge Jimmy had pulled off its mount.
I'll blow that fucker to kingdom come, he heard the deputy say.
The shaky timbre of his voice had been replaced with one of wrath. Jonathan was impressed with the man's intestinal fortitude. Anger in a situation like this was much more useful than fear, and the man seemed to be holding it together a lot better than Jonathan. The detective's hands were shaking badly. It made steering the vehicle that much harder. That's when the engine first started to go wonky. There came a sudden slamming noise that came from under the hood and echoed loudly throughout the interior of the SUV. Jonathan glanced down from the road to the dashboard and saw that the engine's temperature was rapidly climbing. Then there came a second slamming noise from under the hood, this one much louder. It was accompanied by a violent jarring of the entire vehicle. The SUV began to slow, the gas pedal no longer responding, no matter how hard Jonathan pressed it.
Shit, Jimmy said from the back seat.
He started to climb over to the front passenger seat.
Well, Jimmy, Jonathan said with as much composure as he could muster. Looks like you're going to get the chance to blow that fucker to kingdom come sooner than later.
Good, was all the deputy said in return. There was steel in both his voice and eyes.
There,
There's something on the road, Janelle said shakily from the back seat. Both the detective and deputy strained their eyes to see what she was talking about. It took Jonathan a moment to realize the reporter was right. There was something in the road. Something was far more an accurate description than someone, that was for sure. Through the swirling snow and darkness, barely outlined by the headlights, was the hangman. He was hanging out about 3 feet above the ground, the rope attached to the noose around his neck stretching up and up and disappearing into the night sky. The man's arms outstretched in a Christ-like fashion once again. Fucker must know the SUV's done for, Jonathan said through clenched teeth. Looks like it's do or die time, Jimmy answered back. The SUV continued to slowly roll toward the hangman. The engine sputtered its last and finally died. After a few more seconds, the vehicle lumbered to a stop in the middle of the dark, snowy road for a minute, just as they were in silence, listening to the wind and snow blowing around in the darkness outside. Jonathan stared at the hangman, looking at the distant figure up and down. What was this thing? It just didn't make sense. Gangbangers and serial killers, that made sense. Jonathan wasn't a superstitious man. He didn't believe in ghosts or goblins. Monsters he believed in. He killed monsters with his own two hands, but monsters were just flesh and blood men. Men made into beasts by the unfair, economically imbalanced society that the U.S. tries so hard to pretend that it isn't comprised of. But this was a different kind of monster. And suddenly Jonathan found that he very much missed the monsters of old. The old monsters were back in reality he left behind in a dark forest about an hour ago. The old monsters were much easier to deal with. You can't arrest something like this. Jonathan took note of one of the ragged holes torn through the hangman's chest. Even in the dark, he could see the big red spots where the blood and the bullet wounds had frozen. If the man was wearing a shirt, Jonathan knew his chest would look like Swiss cheese right now. The thing's left arm was barely attached anymore. The bone had clearly been obliterated when Sheriff George had put a round from Old Betsy through it. Now it was just hanging on by a few tendons and muscle. Well, at least it bleeds, he thought to himself. If it bleeds, we can kill it. Where had he heard that line before? It seemed like pretty sound logic, except in this case, it didn't seem to apply. The hangman had bled, but it didn't seem to be having much of an effect. And then suddenly a thought struck him. It was a true eureka moment. At least he hoped that it was. Jimmy, when we get out, I want you to aim for the guy's rope, Jonathan said. The rope? Jimmy asked in a confused voice. Yeah. See how dangerous this fucker is when he's stuck on the ground like the rest of us normal people. Jimmy's eyes widened in sudden comprehension. He even let out a short laugh. All right. The deputy nodded, a grim smile playing across his face. Let's do this. Mrs. Butchins, Jonathan said before he stepped out into the cold night, you better just stay here. All the young woman could do was nod. She'd been staring in wide-eyed terror at the motionless hangman ever since the engine had died. Jonathan pulled out his 9mm and checked that it was fully loaded. He already knew it was. He hadn't fired his weapon once since the whole ordeal began, but he still checked anyway. And then the two men opened the doors, stepped out into the darkness and swirling snow. They were instantly wrapped in the night's cold embrace. It seemed to have dropped at least 10 degrees. Thunder boomed overhead, and the snow continued to fall in sheets. The hangman, for his part, just hung there, his body swaying back and forth in the wind. It was as if the thing was waiting to see what the two officers were going to do next. Jonathan knew that hitting the rope at this distance would be near impossible. They'd have to get closer. And so they trudged on the snow, slowly making their way toward the hangman. When they got about 12 feet away, they stopped and raised their weapons to the rope just above the man. The hangman cocked his head to the side in confusion. Both men nearly fired simultaneously. Neither shot found its mark. The hangman suddenly came rocketing toward them, gliding over the icy road at a frightening speed. Jonathan took another shot with his revolver, missing again. The hangman had halved the distance between them in a split second. It'd be upon them in the blink of an eye. Jonathan switched tactics and let a few rounds go off into the oncoming nightmare's chest. The hangman's body jerked violently as three rounds tore through him, adding more to the Swiss cheese quality of the thing. Jimmy took another shot with the 12-gauge. Even before he took it, Jonathan knew it would be the man's last before the hangman was upon them. The weapon boomed loudly, the sound of modern man winning out over the cacophony of nature for a second. The wide spray of the 12-gauge gave Jimmy a much better chance of hitting the hangman's noose than Jonathan's pistol. The detective almost hooted in elation as the deputy's shot found its mark. The hangman's noose violently snapped, and for a second Jonathan thought the monstrosity was just going to keep hovering over the ground. His body jerked in the air as the noose snapped, and for a second Jonathan swore the unholy thing did defy the laws of physics. But then gravity kicked in, and the hangman collapsed in a heap. Jonathan and the deputy just stood there, watching the motionless body as snow blew around it in great gusts. "Holy crap, would you look at that?" Jimmy said as he pointed upward. Jonathan's eyes moved upward in the direction the deputy was pointing in. The detective's eyes went wide as his gaze settled on what Jimmy was pointing at. Even in the darkness, he could see the seemingly impossible length of the hangman's rope falling out of the sky. It was piling up, on, and around the motionless body, forming great cords. The two men stood in the blistering cold, watching in disbelief as the rope continued to fall out of the sky. "What the hell is it attached to?" Jimmy wondered out loud. Jonathan shrugged. "Satan's dick, maybe? At this point, I'd believe about anything." This is crazy, Johnny." Jimmy sounded exasperated. Fear had not yet returned to his voice, but the steely edge had gone out of the man, that was for sure. Thunder boomed once again overhead. The cords of rope were starting to obscure the body from view. Finally, after what seemed like an eternity, the end of the rope came falling out of the darkness. Jonathan guessed there had been at least a mile's worth that had just come out of the sky. It was the sight of that rope that had finally unhinged Jonathan's concept of reality, and in that moment, the detective from L.A. truly did believe in monsters. As one of the two men started to approach the body, keeping their weapons trained on the hangman all the while, a few seconds later, they were standing over the seemingly dead monster man half buried in rope. It now looked lifeless, as it had when Jonathan had first seen the man hanging from a tree branch in the woods. The detective looked down at the thick plastic bag covering the man's head. He just had to know. Slowly, he began to reach down for the bag. Jimmy read his intent and stepped back a few feet, keeping the 12-gauge leveled at the seemingly dead man. Jonathan's hand closed around the part of the bag. He took a deep breath, steeling himself. And then, much like one would rip a band-aid off, he gave the bag a hearty yank. It gave a bit of resistance as its lower section caught the noose, still wrapped tightly around the man's throat, but then the bag gave way. Both men gasped in surprise. Jonathan really had no idea what to expect, but what he beheld certainly wasn't anything he'd ever considered. As the plastic ripped free, the two men were greeted with a sight as disturbing as the plastic bag had been. Covering the man's head was an old-style hangman's mask. He was made of rough, weather-worn burlap. It was like something you'd see in an execution scene in the old black-and-white westerns, except there were two buttons sewn into the mask made to look like eyes. And there'd been a ragged cut made where the mouth was, though this had been crudely stitched shut with what looked like old-style fishing twine. "Jesus, Mary Joseph," Jimmy muttered, his voice barely audible over the wind. For a moment, the two men stared down at the mask. Already, snow was beginning to cover the body. "Well, what do you make of that, Jimmy?" Jonathan finally asked. My granddaddy never had a story about something like this, that's for sure.
Did you guys really kill it?
Chanel Butchin's nervous voice came echoing down the road near the SUV. Just as both the men turned, there came a loud swooshing from behind them. The noise was not unlike the sound he'd heard back in the forest when the hangman first sprung to life. Out of his peripheral, Jonathan watched Deputy Jimmy McDuff get violently ripped off his feet. The man gave a cry that was quickly cut short as his back slammed into the snowy ground and the wind was knocked out of him. Chanel screamed, helpful as always, and Jonathan spun back to face the hangman. The hangman's body suddenly went rocketing down the street, dragging the deputy through snow with him. Jonathan saw that the monstrosity had grabbed one of Jimmy's ankles and that the rope, that goddamn unholy rope, was stretching down the road into the darkness, pulling the hangman by the throat. The hangman and the deputy kicked up a cloud of snow as they carved a path down the road. Jonathan took off running after them, although he knew it was hopeless. They had to be moving at least 12 miles an hour. Jimmy was kicking and screaming for all good it was doing him.
"Hang on, Jimmy!"
Jonathan shouted after the rapidly disappearing figures. Deputy Jimmy McDuff answered back with a "Ah!" just before he disappeared into the shadows.
"Shit, shit!"
Jonathan shouted as he stumbled through the snow. His heavy breath came out in big white puffs. The detective ran. The snow fell, the wind howled, and the sky rumbled. Jonathan just kept following the trail they'd carved. If the storm kept up, the path would be hidden in a matter of hours, maybe less. He followed the path through the snowy night at full sprint for about 10 minutes before doubling over. He struggled to catch his breath. Jonathan glanced back. He could no longer see the SUV or Mrs. Butchins.
Shit. Johnny!
Jonathan turned back to the sound of Jimmy's voice. The deputy was sprinting up the road toward him, running like hell itself was fast on his heels. Which might actually be the case. The man's clothes were torn and tattered from being dragged across the icy road, and there was something about 3 feet long attached to his ankle. It was just sort of flopping around.
"Jimmy, Jesus, man!"
Jonathan went running toward him. The two men reached one another and their eyes locked. Jimmy was pale as a ghost. Despite himself, Jonathan laughed.
"Holy shit, deputy, I thought you were a goner."
The deputy doubled over, his hands on his knees, as he struggled to catch his breath. He was in slightly worse shape than Jonathan.
"How'd you get away?"
Jonathan asked. Elation and relief etched his voice. Jimmy shook his head.
"I don't know. That thing was just dragging me down the street when I heard a loud popping noise and suddenly stopped moving. When I looked up, the guy was nowhere to be seen, so I just took off running."
Jonathan's eyes turned back to the deputy's left ankle. His breath caught in his throat and his eyes went wide.
"Holy shit," he muttered quietly.
Jimmy's eyes turned down to his ankle and he let out a gasp. Clearly, in his mad dash to get away, he hadn't noticed there was a hand wrapped around his ankle. The hand was attached to a stump where the tendons had finally snapped. It was the appendage Sheriff George had weakened earlier with old Betsy. Jimmy yelped and started dancing around like a madman, trying to kick the thing off, but to no avail. The hand had a vice-like grip on him. Finally, after a few minutes, Jonathan got Jimmy to calm down enough to stop jumping around. They sat there in the middle of the dark road, prying the hangman's fingers from the deputy's ankle one at a time. After another couple of minutes, they finally got the damn thing off of him. And the two just stood there in silence, staring at the torn appendage.
"We gotta take this thing with us," Jonathan finally said.
"What?" Jimmy said back, not comprehending the words he'd just heard. "Even if I have to carry it all the way back to town myself, I want the forensic guys to take a look at it." Tonight he'd come to believe in monsters, and he'd be damned if he wasn't going to take some evidence back with him.
"Okay,"
Jimmy said with trepidation in his voice. "Let's go back and get Miss Butchins and hightail it back to town." Jonathan nodded as he stared down at the arm. Finally, he reached down and picked it up by the wrist. He half expected the thing to snap into life and latch onto him, but nothing happened. The two took one final look down the road, hoping that the hangman wasn't going to come flying out of the darkness at them. Darkness and swirling snow was all there was to see. And then they turned and started making their way down the snowy street.